Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. Joining us this week in the VIP tent is Major Dan Greenfield. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Rob. Major? Was I a major last time? I think I might have been demoted.
I can't keep track of all these things.
I was colonel last time.
I apologize.
Wow,
I apologize.
What did I do?
You should be Brigadier General, really. That's really the way it works, but I apologize for that. So, well, anyway, welcome back to MASHcast Season 3, Dan. I'm happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you for having me, particularly to talk about this episode, which is one of my all-time favorites.
Yes, this episode is from, of course, Season 3, Episode 53 of the series, Episode 5 of the season, O.R., original air date, October 8th, 1974, is written by Larry Gelbart and Lawrence Marks and directed by Gene Reynolds. So he's good. Since Dan has been on the show, we know his history with MASH. We'll get right to the episode. So the camp gets ready early in the morning for a grueling marathon session in OR. Among the things that happen, a patient asks to write a letter to his wife, confessing to numerous infidelities before he goes under. Father Mulcahy takes the dictation, but Trapper admonishes him not to send the letter. He's going to pull through. Frank, feeling the pressure of all the wounded, almost removes the one remaining kidney of a patient before Trapper steps in. Hawkeye performs open-heart massage, pulling a patient back from the brink of death temporarily. Henry has to deal with a patient so badly wounded that, if he starts to work, will mean the loss of other, less mortally wounded patients. He grimly decides not to go ahead, basically allowing the soldier to die. Trapper and Frank have a surprisingly candid talk while taking a few minutes off, where Trapper gets a hint of what kind of boy Frank was growing up, turning him into the man he is today. Trapper displays some sympathy, but only goes so far. There are so many wounded that when Sidney Freedman arrives for the weekly poker game, he is put to work performing surgery. Later, Hawkeye is told that the patient he worked so hard to save has died in post-op, leaving him temporarily demoralized, unable to continue working. Sidney gives him a bit of a pep talk, and Hawkeye dutifully goes back to work. To top things off, a fire breaks out on a piece of electrical wiring, but a quick-thinking Trapper puts it out. After all the wounded are taken care of, we are left with Hawkeye and Trapper almost completely passed out, as the PA announcer tells of a change-up in the command structure, one general succeeding another, ending with, "No one succeeding us at all." So, Dan, O.R., it is my contention this episode, and I said this on my blog, aftermash.blogspot.com, that, when you get lists of, like, great MASH episodes, this one is never on it for some reason. I don't know exactly what, but I think this is one of the single finest episodes they ever did.
There is no question in my mind that that is the case. The way I rediscovered this episode was when a couple of years ago, as we've talked about on our previous episode, where I did a rewatch, a binge watch, really. Within the span of 3 months, I watched the entire series. And then I started over again, got as far as the Dreams episode, and then I'd finally had enough. But yeah, but this episode, when I watched it again, and it had been years since I had seen it, I was absolutely mesmerized. And I realized that what I was watching was, in my mind, the first real, for lack of a better term, modern MASH episode. And a lot of people point to, sometimes you hear the bullet in the first season, and rightly so. It was the first time they really did take a dramatic turn in that first season. But to me, this was the episode that fulfilled the show's dramatic potential, where everything was firing on every cylinder, every scene mattered, every scene crackled. There are highs and lows. It's almost practically a bottle episode because almost the entire thing takes place in the OR except for
I was going to say that. Kind of all MASH episodes are bottle episodes because it's such a small location, but this is right. A real bottle episode because it's other than the opening scene in the scrub room, the entire episode is in the OR.
Right. And then there's the ante room on the other side of the OR where they sit and take their breaks, but other than that, that's the entire scenario.
Yeah.
And of course, as we know, with the way they had it set up with the networks, there's no laugh track.
Right.
So there's no laugh track the entire episode, and yet there's still a lot of funny jokes. So I'm watching this and I'm thinking to myself, when I did my rewatch and I just now rewatched it again in preparation for this episode, is that I would put this not only in the top 10 of MASH episodes. I might put it in the top five. It is a – I think it's extraordinary. And I think that it's easy to be taken for granted because you see so many, you know, OR episodes where in the sense where they – you know, there are so many OR scenes that it's easy to take it for granted. But when you realize that the episode is unfolding and the entire thing is going to be the OR and how claustrophobic it is and how tense it is – and the ups and the downs and the way that the characters all respond to each other and what they do, it really is, in my mind, the first MASH episode that really tells you everything you need to know about what this show is at its best.
Yeah, I mean, when I wrote the synopsis, you know, for this episode, I realized that it's just a list of things. And then when you read it out loud, it doesn't sound terribly interesting.
Mm-mm.
But it's kind of amazing in that there is no through line through this episode. There is no singular plot. I mean, you get a little bit of Hawkeye with the open heart massage, and then that comes back. But even that's really kind of just one of many, many elements. And it's, I thought, how gutsy was it of Larry Gelbart and Lawrence Marks to write an episode like this that really is more about the room that everyone is in rather than what happens in the room? Exactly. Because there is no one plot line of like, oh, there's a sick patient at the beginning and they try and figure out, or even that episode in season 8, Lifetime, where they, you know, it all takes place in real time, where it's all about one patient who has a particularly bad wound. It's all small little bits, but yet you, first of all, it flies by. I mean, right. It never feels like it's long or drawn out, but every time I watch this episode, I'm amazed at how captivating it is, considering it is just all little small bits and pieces made up all together.
It is, I would look at it as two ways. It is a character study of the entire cast. And if you're going to look at it in that way, they're right. There is not much, there's no plot. It's a day in the life or 2 days in the life or whatever it is. They never really tell you how long this marathon session goes on for. You just know it's gone on. We know that there's at least at one point, you know, when Sydney shows up, it's nighttime. We don't know how much time exactly has passed. We just know that they are overwhelmed.
Right.
And how each one of them will react in a crisis is shown. Every single one of them. Even Frank and Margaret as well. Everyone has their moment, and you get to see them at their best, and not if not the worst, but at their weakest. Every one of them, except for maybe Trapper, and it's so you're getting a real taste of who each of these characters are, what their relationships are like, how they play off of each other, and it's chaos. It is absolute chaos the entire time. It never stops moving. There is no quiet moment. Even the scene when Hawkeye is performing the open heart massage, it's quiet, but the tension, it's like you can hear your pulse in your ears because of the way it's directed, Alan Alda's performance, the way the others are reacting to him, the way it all plays out, and then even the way the cutaway, when he finally gets the you know, he gets the pulse that he's looking for. They bring him back to life, and he walks, and you just hear Henry, you know, his voiceover. That's the most fantastic thing I've ever seen. And that is such a punch of a line. And then, of course, for it to come back later when you think that it's over, and then, you know, Radar just wanders in, and he's kind of timid about it, and he just tells him that he lost the patient, and it's just devastating. Yeah. Absolutely devastating. And to me, it's more moving than the scene and this is, again, not to knock the episode, but for comparison's sake, to me it's more devastating than the scene in Sometimes You Hear the Bullet, where Henry and Hawkeye are talking about, you know, sometimes, you know, you can't change the fact that war means that there's going to be dead. Hawkeye in that moment is just lost. And the brilliance of them thinking to bring Sydney in for basically a glorified cameo, really, to just be there at the perfect moment to say the perfect thing to Hawkeye is genius.
Yeah, that scene in particular, it's funny. I have this in my notes about for the first, I don't know, couple of hundred times I've seen this episode,
right.
I always took it that when Hawkeye performs the open heart massage, that they were suggesting he was the first guy ever to do it. And I always thought that always bothered me a little because I thought, well, no, because Hawkeye's not a real person. And that means there was a real doctor that did that and he's kind of not getting credit. But then actually just this last time I rewatched it, I realized, no, they're actually not saying that. No. They're saying this is certainly the first time it's ever been done in a MASH unit.
Right.
And that, and you know, that's the – so, I mean, clearly Hawkeye saw this or read it somewhere. So I was like, oh, okay, they actually are not, you know, sort of subverting history.
No.
And giving that to a guy who didn't, you know, a fictional character, which I was like, okay, good. Because there was some doctor out there who was like, hey, I did that first.
Right. Not just that, though. It's a, there's, you know, at best, because it's a 3 or 4 year war, 3 year war, really, that plays out over 11 seasons. There's a very, 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 very loose continuity to the show.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah,
but there are certain elements of their medical progress that you do see across the season. The arterial transplants is one of the big ones, of course.
Yeah,
that's introduced. But there's also my recollection that there's an episode later where they also do an open heart massage, and it's there seems to be some kind of at least vague reference to what had happened before. But that's about the extent of it. I always got the impression it was just simply that Hawkeye had never done it before and they'd never done it under those circumstances.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And so he just throws caution to the wind because what has he got to lose?
Right.
And so he's able to do it. He himself is surprised that he was able to do it.
Right, right. You do mention about the dates. They do mention at one point Douglas MacArthur's ticker tape parade in New York City.
Right.
And that occurred on April 20th, 1951.
Right.
So this is the rare moment where there actually is a historical event that does kind of line up with where MASH was, because this 1951 is still the first year of the war. So you could suggest that if you really want to do a loose MASH timeline, because obviously you have to condense 11 years worth of events into 3 years.
Right.
You would say the Henry Trapper year of the 477, the seasons 1 through 3 is basically 1 year.
Right.
And that would make kind of sense there. Like, okay, I could sort of see. This is 1951. It's kind of early in the war. Early on, one of the early scenes is the scene with Hawkeye and Henry out in not the scrub room, but like the sort of the prep room, basically.
Right.
And I love that moment because I love it when Henry gets to be kind of one of the regular guys, and he's not the commander, and he's just talking to it's not Colonel Blake talking to Captain Pierce. It's Henry talking to Hawkeye. And I love that whole line about, you know, one more brandy and I had to leave an IOU on my wife's pillow. That took me years to understand. When I was a kid, I didn't get that line. I didn't know what it meant. And now I of course understand what it means. And I love the joke about where he says to Henry about the arthritis. He's arthritis. And he says, you know, arthritis, it's right after acne, right before arrangements for time payments. And of course, alphabetically, that's incorrect because arthritis would come after arrangements for time payments. But I also figured that arrangements for time payments is not in any sort of medical textbook. So the damn thing's a joke, you know? I mean, he's just goofing around.
Well, in the way it's set up too, where Hawkeye is sitting there, he's exhausted. And Radar comes in and he's got the cup of coffee that Hawkeye expects us to drink it. And then he hands him the razor and he says, no, really, this is for you to shave because this is all we got. And Hawkeye's look of appreciation and what he says to Radar, he says, I'm going to miss you when it's all over. I'm going to miss you the most. What I'm going to miss the most is you and dysentery.
Right.
Which, of course, is a joke, but he really does mean how much he's going to miss Radar because Radar always anticipates the needs of others. And he says, anything else I can get you? And then he just riffs on this fantasy of wanting lobster in Maine. And
drawn butter,
drawn butter and French fries and the house white wine and all of that. And Radar just isn't really quite sure what to make of it, but he just kind of goes along with it. And he just listens to him. And and Hawkeye's just kind of in his reverie there. And then you know, Radar's kind of like, well, I kind of got to go now. I got to go get people donuts. And it's like, run along, Andy. Mm-hmm. But then that's when Henry comes in and they sit and they have their conversation and you get a revelation about Henry that you rarely got to see. And never in this stark term is that as much complaining and as much beefing and as much anxiety that all of these people suffer through for being in this place, he puts the point on it that they're doing work that they'll never do elsewhere in their lives.
Right.
And that what they're doing, like he says, I'll do more doctoring here than I'll ever do in a lifetime back in the world. And it gives you a sense of Henry's motivation. It gives you a sense of that he understands that he actually has a sense of purpose here. And not to go too crazy, because it wasn't obviously, you know, part of things at that point. When you think back, what you later know is that, of course, Henry doesn't make it home. Retrospectively, watching that episode, it pulls at your heartstrings a little bit more when you realize he never did get to go back to that life. Now, of course, they weren't writing that with that in mind at that point. That all came later. But it's still, if you've seen these episodes out of order so many different times, I can't help but have that ring for me. And it also explains why he wouldn't take, you know, a chance to get out on with the arthritis, that he wants to stay.
Yeah, the line that Hawkeye has where he says, someday you're going to have to go back home and die in your bed in Bloomington,
yeah,
is just dripping with sadness, because is what you said. It's what you know what's coming.
Right.
As you said, they didn't write to that.
Right.
But it's you hear it and it breaks your heart. And that's also at the end of that scene is when the Ethiopian soldier that Hawkeye worked on comes in and says something to him in Ethiopian and gives him a kiss on the hand. And right. Hawkeye says it's the best payment I ever got.
Right.
I should mention that that actor is a guy named Orlando Dole. He only has 4 credits.
Wow.
This MASH episode, the movie Tattoo, the movie Author with Al Pacino, and a very grim sounding movie called Short Eyes about a pedophile in prison, which just, whoa, boy.
It is one of the grimmest 1970s, that's a rough one.
He's got those 4 credits and that's it. So that's a really beautiful scene between the patient and then between Hawkeye and Henry. And then it's immediately followed up with kind of a more comedic scene, which is the one I described where the soldier on the table wants to relay a letter to his wife in case, because he's so sure he doesn't make it. And,
right,
of course, he starts talking about, you know, that girl in Okinawa didn't mean anything to me, or neither of those two in Honolulu,
right,
or that one. And Trapper has Wayne Rogers has the greatest retort, which is, how did you find time to get wounded? Which is
exactly
fantastic. I have to mention this. I love finding these weird data points in the research for these shows. That actor playing the patient is named Bobby Herbeck. He was in shows like Small Wonder, Chips, Hello Larry with McLean Stevenson. But the credit of his that really jumped out at me was he plays the court jester in the 1977 softcore adult version of Cinderella, which I talked about on the Film and Water podcast last year. I can't believe it. It's the same guy. And I was like, okay. There you go.
That's great.
What an interesting career Mr. Herbeck has had.
Exactly. That's great.
So I love that bit. I mean, it's a great. It's almost Marx Brothers ish with the whole those two in Honolulu, that one and this one, and then and I love that the William Christopher's read on it, because he's writing it down,
right,
and he's writing it very seriously in the beginning.
Right,
he's dutifully jotting it down, and then as it goes on, you can see him just kind of pause each time, like, am I really writing this down? Am I really going
to
send this?
And of course, his discomfort is starting to grow,
right,
all the way through. You can see, and that's why I'm saying everybody gets a moment in this. You know, he really doesn't have much to say in the episode, William Christopher, but he plays this scene for all it's worth, but also understated at the same time, because all he's doing is reacting.
Right.
You know, he's just reacting, and he's like, you know, you just and remember, let's not forget either. And same thing with most of them during this episode. You don't see most of their faces. They're acting with their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing
right. They've all got surgical masks on. Right.
So you're only seeing his eyes, and you're seeing his body language, and you're seeing Trapper getting more and more annoyed, and then finally like bye bye, and then of course Father Mulcahy looking a little mystified, and just Trapper turns to him and he says, "Don't send that letter, because he's going to pull through unless his wife gets it." You know, which I thought was a great, you know, Let's just forget this never happened moment.
Yeah. It's a great 1-2 right after that scene with Hawkeye and Henry, which is much more serious.
Right.
And then, of course, in terms of you mentioned earlier about it, this is all about how people are dealing with the pressure. And we see that Frank is cracking. I mean, he tells Margaret to shut up at one point. And even Margaret's like, Frank.
Yeah.
And then that leads to the scene where we reveal that he's trying to take out a patient's kidney.
Right.
And I love the understatedness of that, is because as soon as Frank says – It's a lot of work taking him out of man's kidney. You immediately have Hawkeye go to Trapper, and he goes, Trap.
Yeah.
And you know what that is. They know each other so well that they know that he's telling Trapper, you got to go check in on that because maybe something's right. And then, of course, we find out that this patient that he's working on only has one kidney. Now, I saw in the IMDb trivia for this episode that any man with only one kidney would be declared 4F and would not be allowed in the Army. Now, I've never been in the service, so I don't understand. But I'm like, how would they know? Like, how would they know you have one kidney unless you tell them?
Yeah,
do they go through all your records? And maybe this guy was like Steve Rogers and he really wanted to serve. So, you know, I'm willing to say somehow this guy got in with only one kidney.
Right, people lied about stuff all the time. We've seen that's a recurring theme through many of the episodes where people lying to get into service. You know, the Ron Howard episode, of course.
Right, this is where sometimes
examples.
You hear the bullet, right.
Exactly. And let's hope it's a long and healthy hate. And with this, it's again, you're right. Their reaction is instantaneous. They know something is wrong because it's Frank, and they're like, "This doesn't sound right." Just on the face of it, and also the fact that he's shut up. He tells Margaret to shut up,
and he's sweating profusely.
He's
too.
Sweating
I mean, they all
profusely.
Are, but he's really sweating.
Right. Well, actually, I was just going back to the scene with the open heart massage. I like the fact that Henry says to Hawkeye, says, you know, you are one cool cucumber, and you could see the beads of sweat mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. Hawkeye's face. I mean, you could just like the dichotomy there is fascinating. But anyway, back to this scene, there's a couple of things that one, the fact that Trapper's, you know, bails him out. Frank realizes that Trapper's bailed him out. Margaret realizes mm-hmm. that Trapper has bailed him out and says, thank you, doctor. And with such a sign of respect, and you see a couple of those moments, even as Margaret and Frank are still allied through this, you see that other side of Margaret too, the sense of respect that she has for the other doctors, even if she doesn't particularly like them. And of course, this is before the great emancipation of Margaret Houlihan as a character midway through the series. But if you watch, and particularly I noticed it when I was watching it in you know, as a binge, that it was during the third season where they started to show a little bit of the cracks more frequently between Frank and Margaret. And of course you saw it much, much more so in the fourth season as they were leading into the fifth season when they finally split. So you're starting to see whether they were planning it or whether they were doing it because they wanted to broaden her character. I couldn't tell you, but Margaret here kind of plays both angles in a way that we usually see her played as one note. So this is mm-hmm. an opportunity for Loretta Swit early on to get more than one thing to do, which I also appreciate.
Yeah, it's a great moment. I do have to wonder how bad of a doctor is Frank that he can't tell that a patient only has one kidney? I would think as a doctor that would be pretty obvious. As you start doing it, you would be like, wait a minute, this guy's plumbing has all been rewired.
Yeah, I think so too, but that's Frank.
Yeah, it's Frank. Yeah, and that leads to the scene where Hawkeye does the open heart surgery, the open heart massage, and you get that. You said you get that moment where you have Henry say that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. Now, the anesthetist is played by an actress named Jean Shulher, and she only has credits on MASH. I don't know whether that meant she was not an actress, maybe, and she was just maybe on a crew or something, but. She played a nurse in another episode of MASH, and she also has a very, very special credit. She appears later on in the episode There Is Nothing Like a Nurse. She is Mrs. Burns in the whole movie. That's the same woman, Jean Shulher.
That's Mrs. Great. Because
now, of course, as the anesthetist, her face is covered, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
So when you finally see her in the home movie footage, which is one of my favorite moments in the entire history of MASH, is Frank's wedding video.
Me too.
That's her. So, yeah, she was Mrs. Burns.
And she looks so miserable in that.
She looks so miserable.
Yeah, it's great. It's just so great.
It's great. So that's her. I love finding this stuff out on these things. So
that's great.
She said that whole scene with Hawkeye is great. And then it leads to later on – Hawkeye gets another one of like his one of his great rants where he gets the thing about talking about, I don't know why they're shooting at us. We just want to introduce to them, you know, hyperacidity and the inalienable right to have a coronary while stabbing planning to stab your boss in the back. I mean, it's a classic 1970s malcontent patriotism. It's not
anti-establishment.
That. It's anti-establishment. It is straight up like a Vietnam era kind of commentary transplanted into the Korean War, and it's one of those speeches that you would always see in sort of clip montages.
Right.
And later on is that bit where, and it leads to getting out of hand, where the point where Hawkeye actually just sprays Frank with a needle with water in the face.
Right. Yeah, which is great, and of course, you know, Henry backs him. You know, Colonel's pet and all of that.
Yeah, that's what you are.
But right, exactly. But that rant, you're right. It's such a great speech, and it is. It's again goes to the folly of war. What is it that we are here to protect? What is so great about what we have that we have to be involved in this war 20,000 miles away or whatever, you know, whatever it is, you know, what our lives are so great. America is so great. And of course, you know, the natural inclination is that you're supposed to be defending the red, white, and blue. And that's what Frank stands for. But Hawkeye is all about, yeah, for what? So that you can live this really kind of, in a sense, horrible suburban life.
Right. Right.
You know, is this really what's worth going to war over? And, you're right. It's an exceptionally subversive speech stuck into the middle of this episode. But the way he delivers it is just with rage.
Yeah.
That seething rage that he did so well.
Yeah. It's a great bit. And then the next scene is we have Trapper and Frank have their heart to heart out in the prep room, and we get to learn a bit more about Frank Burns, where he talks about that they weren't allowed as a child, they were not allowed to talk at dinner, and if you even hummed, you got punched in the throat.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, the way that Larry Linville delivers the line, you kind of get a chuckle, but it's also tragic.
I mean,
you're like, my God, what kind of and. You know, your mileage may vary about your sympathies towards people, but I mean, on the one hand, you can't help but have sympathy for someone who was raised in such a completely dysfunctional environment. But at the same time, Frank's also rotten to the core, and he's racist, and he says yellow reds at one point. So it's kind of like, well, you know, I don't know. I have sympathy, and then I kind of don't. But when you get these glimpses of his life, and even Trapper is sort of understanding. He even says he says something like, that's terrible. Like, even he's kind of like, my God, he just can't believe that that's what this guy is. And it's a nice moment because they didn't give Frank Burns that many moments like that.
No, see, one of the things, I mean, of course, the great difference between Frank and Charles is that over time, they deepened Charles' character.
Yes.
They made him multifaceted. They made him complicated. They made him – he had his strengths. He had his weaknesses. He had – you know. And so he was a far more compelling character in the end than Frank was. Frank was a funnier character to have around and a better foil in that regard. But, you know, Charles was more nuanced. So you didn't have that many opportunities for them to actually humanize Frank. This is off the top of my head. This is only one of three times where they humanized Frank in the entire time that he was on the show. It was that scene where you're right. You can't stand him, but you're horrified when he describes what little he does describe of his upbringing. And then the other two times for me are when one of the, I think, season four episodes season five episodes where he gets one over on Margaret. When he, you know, when Margaret's been lording the fact that she's engaged to Donald Penobscot, and at the end of the episode, he actually gets a shot at her that even the other doctors appreciate, and he laughs, and they all laugh together, so they actually they share a laugh, and then of course his last scene when he says goodbye to Margaret after her chopper takes off, but that's it. That's all you ever really get that anything more is going on with Frank than what you usually see, and you do appreciate it, but at the same time, of course. He undercuts himself right away when he says, I guess that's why I became a snitch.
Yeah.
And he says, like, his rare moment of self-reflection where he says, I became a snitch. He says, I didn't snitch on him. I snitched on myself for not snitching on him, which is, of course, the same thing.
Right.
So either way, the other guy's fucked. Oh, sorry. Or you'll beep that out.
But no worries.
The other guy's screwed.
But, yeah.
But yeah, I just it's such a and the way he plays it, and the way Trapper plays it, where he's just basically barely holding together his patience, as Frank goes on about this, is it, between the two of them, it's just a great scene.
It always makes me wonder, like, because there was the MASH crew had lots of adventures that we never saw, because they would refer to, remember the time we did this or that, and we never saw that.
Sure.
And I always wonder, like, did Trapper tell Hawkeye about this conversation at some point afterwards? Like, hey, I talked with Frank for 5 minutes. You know, he used to get punched in the throat as a kid. Like, you know, did he tell Hawkeye that? So they were both kind of like, oh,
well,
my
that,
God, this
but,
poor
but
guy.
Not just that, but I would love to have seen the 2 weeks where they got along.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
When he says to one, and this to me is one of the funniest lines that Trapper ever got to say. He says, okay, well, why do people take an instant dislike to me? And Trapper says, it saves time,
Frank.
It's just great. He says, well, we got along for 2 weeks. He says, that's exactly my point. It was a waste of time.
Yeah.
Great.
It's really, oh my God. And then right after that is when we get the arrival of Sidney Friedman. And just as Sidney arrives, leads to one of my all-time favorite radar-interrupting Henry moments, because they do this bit about where they need more surgical, thread.
Right.
And he's, you know, to sew. And you know, he says, go get Radar and have him get the thread from my wife sent me. And Margaret says, you know, ordinary thread. And he says, well, it's either that or the stapler in my office, Major. But I love it when Sidney arrives, and right at that moment is Henry's dealing with that, and he does the classic, and he ramps up, and right at that moment is when Radar shows up, and the interruption to me is just so funny, just because he just stops, because Radar just appears right behind him, and you go, and he's right there. I just love that. It's like a classic. Radar is just annoyingly competent at his job, that he's just ahead of it, and Henry is almost annoyed.
Yeah.
Almost annoyed that he can't even get the word Radar out before Radar's already there, which is great. But then since Sidney Friedman arrives, and they say immediately, go to work. They stick to him to go to work, which, I mean, he sort of protests a little, because he's like, well, he says, I haven't washed my hands since I became a psychiatrist, which in this climate is, you know, okay, you got to wash your hands there, Sidney.
Yeah.
But they put him to work immediately, and it's great because Hawkeye – you get to see Hawkeye and Sidney Friedman working on a patient together, which you never get to see. And
that's
they have a bunch of great lines. And Hawkeye even – when Hawkeye, of course, is told that the patient that he worked on has died and he's demoralized, and he says something to the effect of, I would do better as a cocktail waitress. And without missing a beat, Sidney just goes, you haven't got the legs for it. And he's just keeping Hawkeye grounded.
Yeah.
Through this whole moment, and it's wonderful. Alan Arbus and Alan Alda had such amazing rapport, and it's just a great scene to watch the two of them just zip back and forth like that.
Well, I've read the stories where apparently Alan Alda would walk up to Alan Arbus, and especially later on when they really started to delve more into the psychology of war and various and sundry episodes that really, you know, dealt with the psychological toll of war. Of course, you know, all the way ramping up to the final, to the final episode, to the finale. But Alan Alda used to go up to Alan Arbus and ask him about therapy and stuff like that. And Alan Arbus is like, I'm an actor.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what are you asking me for? But you're right about that he plays that character so well and so beautifully and so empathetically. That you do think that he's a therapist. He's wonderful, and it's true. The level of trust between the two of them and the level of respect that even though you know Sidney's like, I don't know if I'm up for this. He's like, okay, well, I'll be working with Hawkeye. You could sort of almost see the wheels turning. I guess I got to do what I got to do. And even the part there where Hawkeye's sitting and he's just like shattered and. Sidney starts to get nervous. He says, I've got a bleeder here. What do I do? Do I clamp it? And there's wait. And then finally you hear Trapper called over, clamp it, Sidney.
Yep.
So again, off screen, you know that Trapper knows what's going on. And then he gets the pep talk that he needs to get back in the game. And then Hawkeye arrives at the conclusion that he needed to arrive at from the beginning, which is, let me finish. Mm-hmm. And that's when Henry, that's when Sidney says, yeah, that's occupational therapy. And at that point, he's like, time for me to bow out.
And so, Sidney gets a great exit line, which, of course, would be used later on.
Right.
He says, as he decides to depart, he says, ladies and gentlemen, take my advice. Pull down your pants and slide on the ice.
Yeah.
Which is the very last line ever he ever speaks on the show. It's his exit line.
Yeah.
And there's a nice moment, and I'm jumping several years into the future here, but when Alan Arbus or when Sidney Friedman says that line in this episode, we only see Henry and Hawkeye in the frame. Right. Actually, just Hawkeye, not even Henry. And so you figured that everybody heard it, but you don't necessarily see anybody react to it. In fact, even Hawkeye doesn't react to it.
No.
And then later on in the final episode, when Sidney has that line and that's his exit line, we see Margaret nod in familiarity of it.
Right.
So you're like, oh, yeah, she did hear it.
Yeah.
She knows, she remembered it from that long time ago. And it's that was something in the culture. That wasn't something that Larry Gelbart or Lawrence Marks came up with. That was apparently just something that people said,
right,
and they gave it to Sidney, and that was his exit line, and it would become his big exit line later on.
Yeah,
and then right after that, it leads to another really, probably in some ways, the most brutal moment of the episode, where a patient is brought in, and Henry asks Hawkeye for advice, and he talks about that Hawkeye squints and says, my God, his liver's gone. And he says, you know, it's 8 hours work, and who knows how much pints of blood, and the worst thing is he'll never make it, and in the meantime we could lose a bunch of people that could be worked on. And there's this great moment where Henry says, you know, I'm not really comfortable making decisions like this. And you realize that, going back to the scene that he had with Hawkeye earlier, he's just a doctor from Bloomington. He's not built to make these kinds of life. I mean, yes, doctors make life and death decisions, but you don't get the sense that small town doctor Henry Blake has to make those decisions. And here he is basically having to commit this man to die because it just isn't, and forgive me for using this phrase, worth it when you compare what they're going to lose by working on this guy for 8 hours and using up all these resources, and then he won't even make it anyway. And the way McLean Stevenson barks out, the orderly, help me move this man out of here. And he just, it's almost like he's gone cold. Like he just doesn't want to think about what he has to do anymore. And the way he says it so firmly is really chilling.
Yeah, he has to steel himself to do it. And he does it that way. Like he's like, this is what they taught me in military school.
Yep.
You know, and it's also, it's telling that he basically asks Hawkeye for permission.
Right.
Because Hawkeye, of course, is the superior doctor. We know this. He's the head surgeon.
Yep.
Even though he doesn't outrank, you know, he's outranked by two people in the OR. He's the, you know, he is the authority in the operating room. And he basically turns to him and asks for his permission. And Hawkeye gives it to him. Hawkeye is level headed and is able to, you know, basically keep Henry grounded and make the point that not to be glib, but it is the needs of the many outweighing the needs
mm-hmm.
of the few,
mm-hmm.
to borrow from another franchise. But that's really what it is. And it again shows you the starkness of what they face, that these people who are otherwise civilians have to make not just life and death decisions of what goes on the table, but life and death decisions before people even get to the table. And it just broadens the amount of impact that they have and what it means and the toll it takes on the lives that they lead there.
Yeah, it's really one of the more brutal moments of the show, I would ever say, and just the decisions that you have to make in this situation. And then right after that, Brent Klinger and Radar have hamburgers and coffee, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
And then just to make things interesting, there's a fire. There's an electrical fire, and everybody starts panicking, and it really is. There's all this screaming, and the lights go out. And then Trapper uses some water in a kind of like a squeeze tube, and he puts it out. And of course, you would never throw water on an electrical fire because you would just get zapped.
Right.
And, you know, contrary to comic books, you would not end up with electrical powers. You would just die from that.
He would not become Barry Allen.
Yeah, he would not become Barry Allen or Electro or whoever it worked. But nevertheless, it works. And I love the line about where, of course, Margaret and Frank, you know, unwilling to you know, extend any graciousness at all, yell at him and say, how did you know there wasn't alcohol in that basin? And I love that Trapper goes, oh, I'm sorry, maybe you'd like the fire back.
Right.
And that completely deflates and they're like, well, I was just pointing out. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, and then we have the button scene, which is Hawkeye and Trapper in the cleanup, and we see some various people walking around picking up, you know, the various debris, and we have the voiceover of the PA guy talking about this general has replaced this general, and it all just sounds like a bunch of nothing. Right. And then and it's amazing for what an episode they give this great final pithy line to the voiceover guy, yeah. The guy we never even saw.
Right.
They give that and I love his read on that where he just says so and so is succeeding so and so and so and so, and he just says no, and the pause he puts in, he says no one's succeeding us at all, and that's it. That's the end of the episode, and it's an incredibly dark, grim way to end the show. Yeah. And it just feel like, boy, this took real guts. And you mentioned early on that sometimes you hear the bullet is always given a lot of credit, and duly so, for being, you know, one of the early classics of the show, because it took on themes that, you know, most sitcoms would not dare to touch. But to me, the reason I love this episode so much is that it's experimenting with the form.
Yeah.
I mean, we've dealt with heavy themes, but it's experimenting with, can we do a sitcom episode where there is no laugh track? It's all in one a room for the most part, and most of the jokes are just kind of decoration to the grim reality of what's going on. And the fact this episode works so well, and I'm just so impressed that they pulled off. And I said I don't know if I'd put it in my top five, but I would put it in my top 10. I think it's a brilliant episode.
Yeah, I do too. And I've never sat down and come up with a top, you know, the list of top episodes. I mean, I kind of like hold the big four, sort of the Mount Rushmore of the transition from Henry to Potter, and those four episodes,
mm-hmm.
sort of as almost like the Beatles, almost like the second side of Abbey Road, where it's like, it's kind of hard to look at them as individual episodes. It's almost like this suite of episodes. But if you're just looking at certain episodes, like another episode later in this season, as I've said before on this podcast, is that to me the show was absolutely at its best, at its peak in seasons 4 and 5. That was when that's the sweet spot right there. And that's not to say obviously there's not greatness before and after, but that's really the most consistent MASH ever gets. There's not a weak moment or not a weak episode in those two seasons. Season 3, you're starting to build toward that season 4, but you still have that original cast, so it has a little bit of a different feel. But the thing that amazes me that in that season 3, the one that I consider to be one of the most groundbreaking episodes and one of my favorite episodes is a serious episode like this. And yet the one I think is also the pound for pound funniest episode that they ever did is in the same season. And that's also, and again, not to overuse the word, that's the genius of MASH. And if in the same season you can get OR and Adam's Rib, you know, that's the same television show with the same characters, with the same writers, the same directors, the same thrust, and you can have two incredibly widely divergent episodes like that. That's why MASH was so brilliant. And what I loved about, you know, this episode, watching it on its own, is again you start taking some of the OR scenes, you know, for granted when you watch it over the course of a whole series. But this one's got everything.
Yep.
Absolutely brilliant.
I'm glad you mentioned the crew, the same crew, because as I mentioned, this episode was directed by Gene Reynolds, who was, of course, one of the executive producers of the show and directed many episodes. He actually won an Emmy for Best Directing for directing this episode. And, you know, in an episode that it takes place in one grimy room, I would imagine there might have been a lot of temptation to really kind of come up with some fancy camera angles just to give it some more visual life. But he doesn't do any of that. He kind of just shoots everything in relative medium shots, close-ups, keeps it simple, and makes it very – just lets the performances come to the fore. And that's what makes it so great. So, you know, well-deserved Emmy for the late, great Gene Reynolds for directing this episode, because it's just brilliant. So in an episode that doesn't have a lot of laugh lines, I'm kind of curious, Dan, is if you have a particular favorite joke or just favorite line in general.
Well, the favorite joke is the one when Frank asks – Trapper, he says, you know, the one that I mentioned before, where he says, why do people take an instant dislike to me? And Trapper just shoots right back. It saves time. that to me is my, I think that's the funniest line in the entire episode. But as far as lines and moments and scenes overall, it would be very, very hard for me to pick. I think the one that I remember the most, of course, is the open heart massage scene and everything that goes into that. And then, of course, the payoff or the unfortunate payoff later. So that, I think, is the best moment of the episode. But the best line, the best joke is that one scene between Frank and Trapper.
I would agree. My favorite line actually is not even a joke. It's when Hawkeye and Henry are talking outside the OR, and Hawkeye just says sort of knowingly, "Wars don't last forever, Henry. Only war does."
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, yeah, that's a relatively obvious statement, but there's just something so sad about it.
Yeah.
Of just that, yeah, we'll never quite get over this idea that we're just going to be constantly squabbling with one another like that. And it's just the way Alan Alda delivers it. I would argue that in some later seasons, Alan Alda maybe kind of pitched a little too hard on some of these lines.
Agreed.
But in these early seasons, I think he really had a great understatement. I love the sort of exhaustedness of it. Just don't last forever, Henry, only war does. He just kind of says it in this sort of shruggy manner, and I just think it's great. So, yeah, it's a classic episode, and it's always – I never see it on lists of, you know, oh, the 10 great mashes or whatever. It's just – not that it's not renowned, like you said, it was an Emmy-winning episode, but it's never one that I see on a lot of greatest hits lists, and I just think it's marvelous. It's just a really great episode. So this is very cool, Dan. Thank you for coming by again to talk about this one, because I said it's just a great show.
No, I really do appreciate you having me to do this one, because I have a short list of episodes that, as you go out through the entire series, that I wanted to do, and this one was at or near the top. So I do appreciate you having me on, because this, I can't call it a pleasure to watch, because that would be a really weird way of putting it, but it's an incredibly satisfying experience or gratifying experience. And to be able to talk about it like this and really get into the nitty gritty of it, I really appreciate. So thank you. It's my pleasure to be here, and I'm really glad that you have me on. So thank you.
All right. So why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
Well, they can find me at 13thdimension.com, the website that I run. We also are on Twitter and Facebook with that. We don't really cover MASH there because it doesn't really fit with the 13th Dimension, which is basically a comic book website and comic book related culture, where that sort of thing. But definitely pay us a visit if you're into that sort of stuff. And chances are you are if you're involved with the Fire and Water podcast network. So if you're unfamiliar with us, pay us a visit. And if you are familiar with us, come on back.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, of course, this show, if you want to find the back episodes, go to our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and on Stitcher. We're always talking MASH on Twitter, which is at MASH477cast. And then finally, if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name-checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Adam Sanders, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, and Suzanne Holland for their support of MASHcast. So that's going to do it for this episode, OR. I said one of the classics. We'll be back next week. And until then, that is all.
Ladies and gentlemen, take my advice. Pull down your pants and slide on the ice. See you Thursday.